Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guests today on Keeping the Faith are going to be talking about industrial pollution in Champaign-Urbana, an environmental justice issue. A toxic site has been found in a residential area where there had been a former gas plant. And we're going to be talking with these folks about how the community has responded. And part of the leadership of this response has come from Claudia Lenhoff, who's the executive director of the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. Welcome, Claudia.
Thank you very much.
And you brought with you one of the neighborhood leaders in this effort. Would you introduce him, please?
Oh, sure. I am very pleased to bring with me Mr. M.D. Pelmore, who is a longtime resident of the Fifth and Hill neighborhood and who has been a leader in this campaign for the neighborhood since the very beginning.
And M.D., tell me, how did you first discover that you were living in a neighborhood that had this problem?
Well, we first discovered it when some of the University of Illinois student was came out and was telling us about it. And in the meantime, you know, we never knew anything about it. And I lived there for 30 years or so and never knew that we was living in this dangerous, you know, area, you know. And they came in and told us something about it. And then Mrs. Lenhoff and her squad got together and was telling us all more about it. And the more we learned about it, you know, wow. That was something that an experience that we never knew, you know. And that was about, what, about 3 years ago, wasn't it?
It was. It was about 3 years ago. We had the first community meeting in November of 2007, and that was the meeting where we had worked with the U of I students and brought the community together, and we were presenting the information to people to let them know that this property at Fifth and Hill was a former manufactured gas plant and that it, in fact, was listed with the Illinois EPA as a toxic site. And we presented information about some of the toxic chemicals associated with the former manufactured gas plant, and also the fact that the site was supposed to be cleaned up and it was supposed to be getting cleaned up, but a cleanup had not yet started.
I see.
And that was the first time people really learned about this.
And how did the U of I students happen to be studying this, and who were they? What were they? What was their area of interest?
Well, there were some graduate students who were working with a U of I urban planning professor, and they had ended up filing some Freedom of Information Act requests and gotten some documents, and then they shared that with us, with Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. And then we went to the Illinois EPA's website, and they have a voluntary site remediation program, which is where a corporation that is responsible for pollution or for cleaning up pollution will list their property, their contaminated property, with the Illinois EPA and say, we recognize this property is toxic and we agree to clean it up. But there's no time frame for when the cleanup needs to happen or when they will be made to clean it up. And so, you know, we sort of partnered with the students to try to fill out as much of the information as possible.
Now, the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers have been known for several of their projects. Is this a sort of a new area for you? Have you had to learn something new about industrial pollution?
Oh, absolutely. We felt like fish out of water on this, to be honest. What we are very good at is community organizing and working with people who are affected to try to address a problem. And we initially were just engaged to help put on a community meeting and for the neighborhood. But as we, along with the residents, learned what there was to learn, we said, wow, we can't walk away from this. The residents want to organize. They want to do something. And so we have been hand in hand with the residents learning about the technical aspects of this as well as the aspects of what communities can do.
Now, this Keeping the Faith show deals with matters of religion and spirituality, but also ethics and values. What are the main ethical issues that you see in relation to discovering this kind of a problem in a residential neighborhood? Maybe we should ask M.D. Pelmore about that.
Well, discovering it is one of the things that we learn about, and it brings on a health problem for a lot of people.
Okay.
And there's a lot of people that probably done got sick behind this stuff and passed away, and of course, they said that it's not an issue, but when you start dying and stuff like that and having health problems, then there is an issue behind it, but they don't want to address that issue.
Now, how long ago was this plant in existence, this plant that used coal and made this gas out of it that was a pipe to people's homes? How many years ago was that in operation?
It began its operation in the late 1880s and basically functioned up until the late 1950s or early 1960s. It was functioning in a lower, you know, in a lower capacity in the later years, but it was fully functioning and operating for, you know, for quite a few decades. And during that time, it was called a manufactured gas plant. So as you said, they took coal, reacted it with steam, and that's how they created gas. And at the time when this gas plant was created, it was a very prestigious thing for a community to have one of these manufactured gas plants. It meant your community was up and coming and the residents could get gas piped into their homes for the purposes of heating and light and so on. And so it was seen as a very good thing. But unfortunately, the process produced a lot of waste that is highly toxic and that tends to stick around long after the plant has been shut down.
So probably the height of the production of this would have been in the gaslight era in the early years of the 20th century. So 100 years ago is when this was most active, probably. But the results of the process stick around. They last.
Absolutely. One of the biggest contaminants or one of the biggest waste products is coal tar. And there were a lot of underground structures as part of this manufactured gas plant that were used to hold materials or store materials or create reactions between materials. And so there were a lot of underground structures that have a lot of waste associated with them. And the coal tar, and at the time when the plant was shut down, even though above ground you could see a lot of the buildings disappear, a lot of the underground structures stayed behind and leaked out their contents and the contamination.
Chemicals.
Yes, chemicals, right. And the actual coal tar itself. And then chemicals can sort of leach off the coal tar and migrate through soil and groundwater. And then, of course, there was also, and maybe you want to talk about this later, but there was also a pipe that went from the manufactured gas plant to about five blocks away to the Boneyard Creek, and that pipe was used for dumping coal tar into the Boneyard Creek.
And the Boneyard Creek, for people listening in Indiana or even other states online, is a creek that winds through this university community, goes right through the University of Illinois. It's been sort of beautified in many ways, cleaned up, but here was this pipe that's over probably 100 years old, or
yep,
who knows how old, that was still bringing things from underground to this part of the creek.
That's absolutely right. And in fact, some of the coal tar, once the plant stopped operating and they stopped using the pipe, you know, some of the coal tar stayed and sat in that pipe for decades. And the pipe was an old clay pipe. And so it had, you can imagine an old clay pipe, you know, that it breaks and cracks.
How big
it was 8 inches in diameter.
8 inches. Oh.
And it cracks and roots grow through it and so on. And so, you know, chemicals leach out from that pipe and migrate through the surrounding soil and, you know, into the groundwater in the area and then also into the boneyard.
Now, I want to give telephone telephone numbers for listeners to call in with comments or questions. But before I do that, let me just determine. Now, what was the name of the company that was doing this process, making gas out of coal?
Well, it changed its name quite a few times throughout the years.
Over 100 years,
yeah. Yeah. Urbana and Champaign Gas and Light, Champaign and Urbana Gas and Light, and various, you know, variations of that name. And then ultimately Illinois Power owned the property long after the plant had been shut down. But then, you know, when Illinois Power was sort of reorganized into Ameren, then Ameren bought this property, and that's who owns it now. But actually, if you even trace back Ameren and Illinois Power through the years, it all comes back to these, you know, this company, and then, you know, this company grew throughout the state, but it had many different names throughout the decades.
Now, I'm not sure that you have gone back this far in the history, but when it was first called Champaign-Urbana Gas and Light or Urbana-Champaign Gas and Light, was the name William McKinley? Did you ever run across that name as the head of it? Because he was the head of the company that became Illinois Power that provided the first electricity to this community. And I wondered if he also was involved in the gas company.
You know what? I believe that he was that he was on they had a board of directors or managing officers of the company, and I believe he was one of them. But unfortunately, my coworker Grant Antoline is the one who is really knowledgeable. Yeah, but I feel like I remember him telling me that name, because then we were making associations with some of the names in our community of streets and buildings and things like that. Yeah, that were named after some of these individuals.
Well, the reason I know that particular history is because his father was, during the Civil War, pastor of the First Presbyterian Church in Champaign.
Oh.
And with William McKinley, who later became a senator from this state, when he started his own business, he started the Urban that ran
yes,
pulled originally by mules, and then when it became electrified, he owned the companies that made the electricity to power the Urban.
Absolutely, and that was part of there was actually a period of history with this plant, with this company,
uh-huh,
where that service was part of, you know, part of the company that they did. So I bet you're correct.
Well, that would be my guess, at least. That's a bit of local history. But well, let me give the phone numbers for folks who want to talk about this issue, because, of course, the ethical questions are fascinating, because here's something that was seen as something very helpful for the community. As you pointed out, it was very very modern,
mm-hmm,
and helped the community grow, and yet some of the results of it are a problem today. So if you are interested in this issue, please do give us a call. If you're listening online or if it's a long-distance call, punch in 1-800-222-9455 for a toll-free call to our station here, and our technical director, Kyle Crow, will answer the phone and get you in line to talk with our guests today, Claudia Lendhoff and M.D. Pelmore. If it's a local call, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area where this program originates, punch in 333-9455. So again, long distance, 800-222-WILL, locally 333-WILL. Well, let's talk a little bit about Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. And you talked about how you organized this first meeting and then felt you just couldn't walk away from the issue. What have you done?
Well, we have done a lot of work with the residents in the last 3 years. Some of what we've done, you were talking earlier about, you know, what are the ethical issues involved in this? And one of the first and most important issues, I think, is the right of residents to know. The right to know that they are living adjacent to a toxic site and that they may be affected with that. So one of the first things that we worked on with the residents was having all of us get educated. So gathering information both about the toxic site So understanding what it is and what kind of chemicals are associated with it and what kind of health effects can be associated with that, but also understanding the process. What is the process through the Illinois EPA for getting a site like this cleaned up? But first of all, getting it thoroughly investigated so that you can find as much of the contamination as possible. And also, what are the residents' rights in this process, both, you know, at the state level, at the federal level, and of course, at the local level. And so we had a lot of informational community meetings where we shared information. We worked with the residents to develop strategies for how they wanted to move forward to in order to assert their rights. One of the big challenges that we had very early on is that we found that the Illinois EPA was not responding very well to the residents in terms of getting their questions answered, treating them with respect, listening to the concerns that they had, listening to the information that they had that may point to evidence of contamination in the neighborhood. And so we spent a lot of time sort of wrangling with the Illinois EPA and trying to get them to bring information to the community and answer to the community.
Why do you think there was that lack of response from a state agency to a neighborhood who was bringing up this issue?
I think my personal opinion is that I think that the Illinois EPA over the years has gotten too comfortable in their relationships with the very corporations that they are supposed to be sort of monitoring and watchdogging. They work together very closely, and so they sort of have a shorthand and a relationship because they work on many other kinds of sites together and all of that. And the other thing is that I think the Illinois EPA, it's understaffed, underfunded, and they really just want these companies that are enrolled in the voluntary site remediation program to be able to, you know, do what they're going to do, and then everybody can check it off the list and say, that's done. And I think that when the neighborhood is active and participating, that it feels to them like a hassle and like it's slowing things down. And why can't these people just trust us and let us get through this? And I think they also really don't have, and they haven't done, the Illinois EPA has not done a good job of overseeing this investigation by Ameren. Ameren has to do the investigation to find the toxic chemicals.
Well, let me see if I understand this right. You're saying that the corporation that produced the chemicals that are toxic in the neighborhood are the ones who are required to do the investigation to see if anything needs to be done?
Yes. As backwards and bizarre as that seems, that's sort of the devilish aspect of the voluntary site remediation program. It's sort of the state's way of saying, hey, corporation, if you volunteer to clean up your own toxic site, we're going to go easy on you. You know, you do the investigation, we'll review it, but you do the investigation and then you come up with the proposed solution. And of course, we'll review that and we have to authorize it. But I think that I think that Ameren did not do a good investigation. And I think that the Illinois EPA did not do a good job of reviewing their investigation and requiring further investigation. And so on the books, the Illinois EPA felt like Ameren is doing everything fine and it's all good, and why are these people so unhappy and they're just demanding? And I also think that both the Illinois EPA and Ameren suspect that the residents are trying to get something out of this monetarily. And what they're not hearing and not understanding is that the primary concern of the residents is the health effects for current and former residents and for future residents. And the residents really, well, Mr. Pelmore can speak to this, but I think if you hear the residents speak, that is really their primary concern, is making sure that, you know, this problem has been uncovered. Now let's really take care of it so that people won't get sick from it.
So both sides are really saying, follow the money. The neighborhood is saying, well, here's this big corporation that's trying to spend as little as it can to clean up a problem, and it's caused over many decades. And the corporation people and the EPA sound like they're saying about the neighborhood, well, these folks are trying to take money because they happen to live here.
Yes, and I think that's a correct assessment. And I think the problem with that is that the Illinois EPA seems to forget that they do not work for the corporations. They work for the people of the Illinois. They have a mission. They are taxpayer funded, and they have been, in our opinion, with regard to this site, we feel that they have actually been derelict in their responsibility.
So how do you prove that? How do you discover that, and then how do you prove it and publicize it? Did you make use of the connection with the University of Illinois and the students who were involved in this early on?
We have done some of that, but some of the way that we are I think it's the Illinois EPA itself that is proving that they're derelict. For example, some people may have heard about this toxic pipe that we found that ran from the former manufactured gas plant down into the Boneyard Creek. And that
it's about 5 blocks, you say.
Yes, it's about 5 blocks extending westward into the Boneyard Creek. And its sole purpose was to allow the company, when the plant was in production, to dump coal tar into the pipe so that it could be dumped into the Boneyard Creek. Because, see, it costs the company money to remove the waste products. They would have to carry those waste products someplace. And so the common practice of these plants was to find a waterway, build a pipe, and dump it. And
was that legal at the time?
I don't believe it was legal, but I also don't know that there were laws prohibiting it. It was a common practice.
Okay.
And you were asking me about, you know, how do I know or can show that Illinois EPA has been derelict? Well, we uncovered a 1915 document that showed that this pipe existed. And the document was written by a gentleman who at the time worked for what is now the Illinois Geological Survey. Oh. And so this was their predecessor, but it was a state agency. He was commissioned by the city of Champaign in 1915 to investigate why it was that the boneyard was contaminated and contaminating the banks and areas surrounding it with a black tarry substance. And so this gentleman had to, his name was Ralph Hilscher, and he had to go and literally walk the boneyard and try to find where this black tarry substance was coming from. And he identified this 8-inch red clay, you know, tile pipe that he witnessed dumping basically coal tar into the Boneyard Creek. And then he followed that pipe and found that it belonged to the manufactured gas plant. And in his report, he wrote that this practice should cease immediately because it was resulting in literally tons of coal tar going into the Boneyard Creek every single year. And this was the source of the contamination. Residents were up in arms about this, and that's why the city investigated it. Well, we found this report, and we shared it with the Illinois EPA, and we said, you know, and the reason we shared it is because we felt that the investigation of just the property at Fifth and Hill, where the former manufactured gas plant was not enough to find all of the toxic waste resulting from that plant. And we shared this report with the Illinois EPA. We asked them if they would investigate it. They said no. So then my coworker Grant and I decided to see if we could find evidence of this pipe existing. And we ended up one day in November going down into the Boneyard Creek following Mr. Hilscher's report, and we found the pipe outlet exactly at the location where you would expect if you had read Mr. Hilscher's 1915 report. We took photos and videos and samples. And
was anything coming out of the pipe now, 96 years later after that first report?
Well, it's not a functioning pipe in terms of there was nothing being actively pumped through it or discharged. However, it did have coal tar in it. Huh.
So you had it analyzed.
Yes, we had it analyzed, and you know, and as groundwater moves through the pipe, you know, then it can carry the chemicals.
Okay.
And sure enough, I broke off a bottom section of the pipe, and there was about 3 or 4 inches of a layer of some substance that I didn't know what it was, and I took it out. It was like My coworker Grant hates when I say this analogy, but it was literally like taking a brownie out of a pan. You know, I turned it over and this substance came out and it was in cake-like form, and it turned out that that was actual coal tar. So 100 years later, there's this coal tar still sitting in this pipe. We shared all of these results with the Illinois EPA and said, will you investigate this pipe as part of the former manufactured gas plant? Right. And they said no.
Why?
We think that's a – well, in fact, I brought an email. And then we found even further evidence. But basically, after the analysis and everything showed that this is what we think it is, the Illinois EPA says – that their site remediation program has no plans to address this contamination. Since the pipe is not enrolled in the site remediation program, there is no action the program would take. What he is saying is that since Ameren did not voluntarily enroll the pipe into its program with the Illinois EPA, the Illinois EPA's hands are tied, and it's almost like this pipe doesn't exist and there's nothing to be done with it. Well, we think that that's ridiculous and a real dereliction of duty, and that's one of the things that we're working on now is how do you make the Illinois EPA do its job on this, and if it won't do its job, where do we go from here? Because this pipe, 5 blocks long, running through a residential neighborhood with coal tar in it, is a real danger.
Let's talk a little bit about the neighborhood. MD Pelmore is here from the Hill Street neighborhood. MD, I won't ask you to give your address, but tell me, are there homes that are built on top of this pipe or just near it, or does the pipe run down the middle of a street as far as you can tell? What have you learned about this?
Well, we think the pipe runs down along the railroad track there.
Okay.
And it goes into the Boneyard Creek. But in the meantime, the water wells that all these houses, including my house, have had in the past like old wells. You know, if you go back in the Western days,
sure.
They dig a hole down there and go down and get the water.
Yeah, my house has a well right now.
Okay. Okay, you know what I'm talking about there. Okay, but anyway, all these houses along that had wells in them.
Had wells.
And
okay.
By them having wells in there, and this a chemical getting into these water wells, and now the fumes are coming off of that. And also, people have built houses over some of these wells that they have dug.
Oh.
And this getting into their basement, and chemicals are coming up into their house, and these are making people sick.
Oh.
But the EPA and the Illinois Water, Illinois Water?
The Geological
Survey. Yeah.
Geological Survey. Okay.
Yeah, they don't think it exists, see?
Oh.
And we have asked them to come out there and check it out, and they will not do it, see?
Hmm.
And some of this coal tar that we're talking about is we haven't had any storms over there, you know, earthquakes and everything. So how did it move from off of their land over onto other people's property? They have bought property. I'm talking about Ameren now.
Sure.
They have bought property off of their property, you know.
The original property.
Yeah, the original property. Bought a house for $100,000 right across the street from there because the chemical was underneath of that house.
Oh.
They bought a house over across the railroad track and because the chemical was under the house.
Oh.
And I think they bought another one. Then they bought two or three houses over there. And that chemical, if they said doesn't move, the one time the guy told us at a meeting, he says move 20 feet a year. And then come back, he said doesn't move at all.
Uh-huh.
And if it didn't move, well, how did it get over on my property?
Uh-huh.
And so I've asked them to come out and check it, but hey, you know, they don't want to admit that it's there, see?
But
the whole neighborhood in that area has wells all along there in every house that goes along there, see?
And even if it were only under the railroad, kids play on railroad tracks.
Yes.
You can't keep them away from trains.
That's right. And actually, where we think this pipe is that runs along the, you know, parallel with the railroad track, There's a lot of backyards. So we do believe that it may be going through, you know, a lot of backyards or the edges of backyards. And then, like Mr. Pelmore said, you know, the coal tar and then the chemicals, the toxic chemicals associated with that, you know, do migrate and move. Yeah. And so, you know, it's in very close proximity to residential properties.
Now, in terms of allies that you have in this sort of battle with Ameren, this big corporation, since all this property is in the city of Champaign, have you had help from the city of Champaign in this?
I would not say that we have had help from the city. In fact, we had on numerous occasions asked the city to join with the residents to advocate to the Illinois EPA that this situation be handled differently and taken more seriously, and the city sort of refused. And very recently, the city did a good thing with regard to the toxic pipe in that they excavated a portion of the pipe to make sure that no further contamination directly from the pipe would enter the Boneyard Creek. But they did that under duress. They did that under the threat of a lawsuit. I went to the city council and, first I delivered a letter to the mayor and then went to the city council back in November and filed with them a notice of intent to sue under the Federal Clean Water Act, saying that under the Federal Clean Water Act, because the pipe ended at the Boneyard Creek and that property belongs to the city of Champaign, the city is responsible for making sure that that pipe cannot discharge any kind of contamination into the Boneyard Creek. And we gave the city 60 days to respond, to take corrective action. And ultimately, the city did do the right thing, took the corrective action, excavated the pipe at the Boneyard Creek, and then a little further east of that, basically in the month of June. And they did the right thing, but it came under duress of the threat of a lawsuit. We shouldn't have had to do that. And now that now we're concerned about the remaining basically five blocks of pipe, and we need to ask the Illinois EPA to act on this. And we do intend to ask the city to stand with the residents in calling on the Illinois EPA to deal with the rest of the pipe. But I don't know if they will join with us or not. I mean, basically, every step that we've taken that involves the city has genuinely felt like a real uphill battle. But I do want to say I'm optimistic for maybe a change in attitude, because there are, you know, there's some new city council members, a new mayor, and although it's still all the same staff, it may be that if there's a different attitude coming from the city council, and there have been some city council members, individual members, who have been very supportive, so maybe we'll see a different kind of relationship. That's what we're hoping for.
I want to get back to some of those issues in just a minute, but we are about halfway through our program. This is Keeping the Faith, which you are hearing at WILL, AM 580, and hearing online at www.will.illinois.edu/AM. Again, we have phone numbers, and if listeners would like to call and ask a question, make a comment, you may do that, 333-9455 if you're calling in the Champaign-Urbana area. If it's long distance, 800-222-9455. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Sunday afternoon programs. They are live and a call-in show here on Sunday night dealing with issues of religion, spirituality, ethics, or values. Next week, I'll be traveling, and Don Nolan will be our guest host. And unfortunately, we've had a slight change of schedule. Rabbi Alyssa Weiss, it turns out, from the Jewish Voice for Peace, will not be able to be with us August 7th, so we're still arranging who our guest will be for next week. But Don Nolan will be the host while I'm up in Wisconsin at a jazz festival. Mm-hmm. The following week, I will be back and be interviewing Marcia Owen and Samuel Wells, who are the authors of a new book called Living Without Enemies, Being Present in the Midst of Violence. Sam Wells is the chaplain at Duke University, and Marsha Owen is the executive director of a nonprofit there in Durham, North Carolina, that's been working with some of the folks in some very diverse neighborhoods, trying to bring reconciliation between various groups. That'll be August 14, Sam Wells and Marsha Owen. August 21st, our guest is Professor Richard Hult. Bud Hult will be talking about the development of moral reasoning in children. He is a educator and a professor of education at retired from the University of South Carolina. On August 28, our guest will be Professor Walt McMahon, Professor Emeritus from University of Illinois, talking about a very interesting issue. What has your education done for you? Walt McMahon, our guest, August 28th. And again, let me highlight that on September 11th, we'll be replaying a program where I interviewed three folks who had family members die in the terrorist attacks, September 11, 2001. We'll be replaying a program that was broadcast in 2009 with three folks who were part of a group called Peaceful Tomorrows, who have been working steadily since over the last 10 years with trying to find ways to respond in peaceful ways to some of the causes of those terrorist attacks. Well, let's get back to our guest today, Claudia Lindhoff, who's the executive director of the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, who has brought with her one of the neighborhood leaders, M.D. Pelmore, from the Hill Street neighborhood. We do have a caller waiting on line number one. Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm very appreciative of the work the Consumers Group is doing, and I would wonder if we could have some definition of the geographical location that's involved here. The Boneyard runs right through the university, and we might know where the possible contamination is threatening the health of people.
Thank you for your question. Who would like to respond?
I can do that. In terms of the actual toxic site owned by Ameren, the former manufactured gas site is located literally at 5th and Hill Streets in Champaign, which is just a few blocks north of University Avenue off of 5th Street. And then the pipe that we're talking about runs along the railroad tracks near that property. They run in a slightly northwest direction and intersect with the Boneyard Creek. And then the Boneyard Creek, as the caller said, it runs through Champaign and then over through the University of Illinois and into Urbana in a sort of southeast direction. And it does run through the middle of campus along, Green Street and so on. And, of course, we've also had some incredible beautification projects in the city
that
of Champaign.
Second Street, the Second Street Reach, and through the university. It's all been made very, very, very lovely.
Yeah, those are all really beautiful and very lovely. And I think the thing to understand in relation to this toxic site is all of that is downstream and south from where this pipe entered the Boneyard Creek. So, the concern is that the contamination may be far more widespread than just in the 5th and Hill Street neighborhood. And in fact, some of the consultants with whom we have been working believe that actually if there were to be in an ideal situation, if we could do as much testing as we felt was needed, they would want to test along the Boneyard Creek floodplain for a fair distance south of where that toxic pipe entered the Boneyard Creek. And, I think that the thing to keep in mind is that, this kind of dumping took place for decades upon decades, and it was tons and tons of coal tar. So the contamination could be, spread pretty far and wide. And then the Boneyard ultimately goes into the Salt Fork and so on, and those waters go over into Indiana and basically flows eastward.
Caller, did you want to follow up?
I think this describes the area well. Thank you.
Thank you for the call and the question. Again, 333-9455 in Champaign, Urbana. Long distance, 800-222-9455. Well, let me ask sort of a skeptic's question here to you, Claudia. I mean, this isn't radioactive waste. This isn't strontium-90 or something. I mean, why be concerned about coal?
Well, it's the coal tar that is of concern, and coal tar itself is a toxic soup made up of a lot of highly toxic chemicals. And, you know, there's a whole list of chemicals, but one of the main chemicals that we're concerned about and that Mr. Palmore was alluding to in terms of vapors that have entered people's homes and so on is benzene. Benzene is a volatile organic compound associated with coal tar, and it moves through soil and through groundwater, and it can create vapors and enter people's homes that way. And in terms of sort of answering the next skeptic's question about, well, how do you know that the benzene has actually affected people or entered the spaces where they live, the residential areas, we have actually done testing of people's homes through some consultants with whom we've worked who are – these are environmental experts who do this kind of testing for a living, and they tested several homes, including Mr. Palmore's, for what is called vapor intrusion. And vapor intrusion is when toxic vapors enter your home. Most people will be familiar with vapor intrusion in Illinois if they think of radon gas. Now, radon is a naturally occurring gas in much of the soil of Illinois, and it can enter your home through the same process of vapor intrusion. However, benzene is not naturally occurring. If you can detect pools of benzene vapors underneath your home, they did not get there naturally. They came from a source, and they are highly toxic. Benzene is strongly associated with leukemia and other kinds of cancers of the blood. And in the neighborhood, there are quite a few residents who have had the kinds of cancers that are associated with leukemia. And for example, on one street, that we have found three unrelated individuals. So these are not from the same family. Three unrelated individuals who had now I'm going to blank on the name of the it's called multiple myeloma. It's a cancer of the white blood cells, and it's a fairly unusual cancer. And you would certainly never statistically expect to find three cases at the same time in one block of unrelated individuals within, you know, that same time frame. It's very statistically improbable. And so there is all kinds of concern. And there's many ways of things being toxic. They don't just have to be radioactive. It can be, chemical, carcinogenic, and so on.
Now, this is reminding some of our listeners, along with me, of a fairly recent movie. Have people started calling you Julia Roberts?
I think actually my coworker Grant Antoline would be Julia Roberts,
okay.
or Andy Blosier, who's one of the folks who have worked so hard on this. But no, I certainly have not been called that. But I think that movie, if people have seen that, is a very appropriate analogy to this situation. We're basically
at that movie.
I'm sorry. It's the Erin Brockovich story. So
right.
The movie is called Erin Brockovich. But she in the movie, she worked with people who had been affected, and she found signs of the contamination. And she found the signs by talking to the people, hearing about the kinds of health problems that they had, but also hearing things about the property and the water. And in that movie, the issue was chromium 6, I think. But we have had to do similar things. We go door to door in the neighborhood and we talk to residents. We ask them about their health experiences. We ask them about experiences in their homes, about do they have funny odors in their homes? Do they get headaches? Do their basements flood? Do these things coincide so that, for example, when their basements flood, does their house smell funny? Do they get headaches and so on? And those are all signs of contamination. And so we as a team with the residents and our organizers have all functioned as Julia Roberts in terms of finding the signs of contamination.
And have you found a good pro bono lawyer?
We are actually working with teams of lawyers. Actually, the first set of lawyers who we're working with are the law firm of Kennedy and Madonna, which this is Robert Kennedy Jr.'s law firm and Kevin Madonna. And we've been working with them as well as with the Weitz and Luxembourg law firm. And that is, in fact, the law firm, the main law firm with whom Aaron Brockovich in real life works. And so
we have another caller again on line number one. Hi.
Hi. I was thinking, since you brought up the broader issue, the whole could you place this about in the whole issue of environmental racism? And I know that I think when you were first discovering this problem, you looked around the country to see what other people were doing, and it's not an isolated thing. This is a phenomenon where the poor, mainly people of color, always seem to live on the marginalized land. And I've always thought in the geography of Champaign-Urbana that the reason we have marketplaces is because of the distortion of, you know, environmental racism, brownfields, and that sort of thing. That it, you know, there would have been natural growth except for the fact that we have, you know, a little ghetto and we have problematic lands, brownfields, I guess they call them. So I was wondering if you could just place it in sort of the broader broader arc of things, and considering there was film made about it, but it wasn't quite. I guess that's enough. Thank you. I'll listen in.
Thanks.
Well, I'll say something real quick and then turn it over to Mr. Pelmore in case he wants to say something. I mean, I think that you know, one of the issues that we encounter frequently when we feel like we're not being heard or not being taken seriously, especially more at local levels, I think, is the feeling that, you know, if this issue were coming up in Cherry Hills or some other neighborhood, we think the response might be fairly different.
Like in Charfields, for example.
Yes, for example. We feel like, you know, the response might be a little bit different. And
or the faculty ghetto or something.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. But we don't let that deter us. The caller is right that a lot of times these kinds of you know, these kinds of situations are geographically located in, you know, disadvantaged neighborhoods. And, you know, one of the reasons that we're working so hard at this campaign, and especially with this former manufactured gas plant, because it's a very specific type of contamination, is because Ameren, for example, just Ameren IP, just our Ameren here, Ameren IP, owns 23 more properties like this throughout the state of Illinois. Now, those are the ones that they own in the state of Illinois. There's hundreds of them, you know, and thousands of these kinds of properties all over the country. And there's very few, if any, communities who actually know about them and who know the dangers of them and who have been involved in organizing around them to try to get the best possible for the residents. And so we, you know, this is really a David and Goliath struggle, you know, not just for the reasons that the caller mentioned, but also for the reasons of, you know, corporations versus people and governments that are too cozy with corporations, you know, versus the people. And we're hoping to have a big impact with this campaign, not just locally, but help provide a blueprint for other communities around the state and around the nation as they start waking up to the knowledge of their own former manufactured gas plants and the kind of contamination that it can produce.
Now, I've had a rather specialized background, so I happen to know what David and Goliath meant. But that reference, so would you explain that?
Well, the reference is in terms of, you know, a huge struggle, a huge opponent, far, far bigger than you. You can give the sort of the more spiritual or religious reference, but although we do feel that way as well. I mean, there's this
giant corporation, and you feel some people who are relatively powerless are trying to get some justice here and are having a hard time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's against the corporation. It's against the state agency that's supposed to be protecting the people. It's against, hopefully this will change, but against the local city where these people are residents of and should be treated, you know, with the highest regard and respect and care for their welfare. And but, you know, one of the things that we know at Champaign County Healthcare Consumers is that you know, you just don't go away. We don't quit. We're not going to quit. The residents aren't going to quit, so we're not going to quit. And we're, you know, we feel like family fighting this fight together because this is for the residents and the future generations.
Let me ask MD a question about the neighborhood. You said you've lived there, what, 25, 30 years?
About 30 years.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. How did you happen to choose to live there?
Well, we wanted to build our retirement home, and so we found a place that we thought would be suitable for it. And at the time we built it, we didn't know about this contamination that was in the ground, see? And that was back in 1979 that we bought the house, bought the land, built a house, and that was supposed to be our retirement place of living, see?
Uh-huh.
And when they came along and told us about this, and Champaign County Health got behind us and showed us a lot of this stuff, and if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't, you know, we can't dig up this stuff. An individual, you know, hey, it's a low-class neighborhood, and we don't have the proper thing, email and all that kind of stuff to dig up all these things that Champaign County Health dug up for us. And we just as proud of them as we could be because of that, you know. And this, like I said, it's a poor neighborhood. But Ameren know that this is not, they know what's going on. Because over in Taylorville, let me put it to you, I don't know how poor the thing was over in Taylorville, but that was five or six or seven people died from the same stuff that they're doing over here.
Oh.
So they know about it. And so I'm just glad that Champaign County Health consumers could dig all this stuff up and let us know about it, see?
Now, the Pelmore family is well-known in Champaign-Urbana, your extended family. And I remember when I was in Urbana High School, there were some Pelmore folks that we knew.
Yeah.
And, of course, I graduated in 61. That may be before your time, but
I know that was after me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. You're a nonprofit agency. When were you founded, and why were you founded?
We were founded in 1977, and the purpose for founding our organization was to make sure that consumers, as opposed to providers, healthcare providers, could really have a voice in the healthcare system. At the time, there were some federal dollars flowing down to the local community, and there were these health planning boards that were supposed to be made up of 51% consumers who would then decide how to spend the federal dollars to improve health in the community. And the boards were dominated by healthcare providers. And so, you know, this was the original purpose for the founding, but then the organization quickly grew, and some of the early struggles that the organization took on involved Medicaid discrimination at local clinics, and the organization really set its course as a grassroots organization. That doesn't just mean a local organization, but it means an organization where the people who are affected and who are invested have a role at all levels of the organization. So in other words, we're not just sort of a think tank where we figure out the problems and the solutions and just lend our opinion. We do community organizing to engage, you know, people in the solution.
And how are you funded?
Well, we are funded through a variety of means. I mean, mainly it's community support. People make contributions to our organization. They become members and they make contributions or they give online. We do fundraisers like our annual awards dinner or a raffle. And, of course, we also write for grants and get some support that way. It is a tough climate, but I think the reason that our organization survived compared to many others that were started at that time is that we stayed very close to the community and we very much work on the issues that the community feels, you know, is important.
How many staff people do you have?
We have the equivalent of 5 full-time staff members. I just went through some staff transition, so I was quickly trying to calculate in my head. But we're not a big organization staff-wise, but we have some fantastic staff members. but we do a lot of the work that we do with some very dedicated volunteers and advocates and community members like Mr. Pelmore.
Where are your offices and how can people get in contact with you or learn more about you?
We are located in downtown Champaign in the Lincoln Building at 44 East Main Street, Suite 208 in Champaign. And our phone number, we can be reached by phone at 352-6533.
That's an area code 217 for
yes.
people in other areas who might want to contact you. Say those numbers again.
Thank you. It's area code 217-352-6533. And we are also on the web at www.healthcareconsumers.org. All one word, healthcareconsumers.org. We also have a Facebook page. And also, this Fifth and Hill Neighborhood Rights Campaign has a Facebook page of its own. So if you do Facebook, you can like our organizational page and our Fifth and Hill campaign page.
And if people want to walk into the neighborhood and look around, where should they start?
What do you think, Mr.
Pelmore?
Well, it'll be best if they just walk down Fifth Street and... right now, they done took down those big tents and stuff, you know, that they had up there. They had them up there for, what, two years or so, and they was digging underneath there, and it would look like a whole city over there, you know, of chemical stuff that they was working on.
At Fifth and Hill.
At Fifth and Hill.
Uh-huh.
Just before you cross the railroad track there at Fifth and Hill, just go down Fifth Street, or you could come down 4th Street and turn on Hill Street, and you run right into it.
And then you could walk west toward where the city has made its excavation at the Boneyard, those 5 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a good walk. Take your bikes over there, see what it looks like. I'm curious as to how, when the city excavated the end of the pipe, what they do when they stopped excavating. There's still pipe for another 4 blocks or 4.5 blocks, right?
Well, that is exactly right. And that's where we feel that the Illinois EPA should come in and investigate the rest of the pipe and excavate it. One of the really important things to understand is that when the city excavated their portion of the pipe, they did also seal it off with bentonite clay so that stuff can't run in or out of the ends of the pipe where they excavated. But
as far as that clay goes.
Yes, yeah. As far as that clay goes towards the Boneyard Creek. But you're right, there is that whole other length of pipe. But when the city excavated the pipe, they found, you know, they did find a length of it. And just like what we found when we went down into the Boneyard Creek, there was a layer of coal tar pooled at the bottom of that pipe, and there was coal tar all in that area where they excavated. So that's one of the, if people are following this issue, keep an eye on that. We may be asking people to help us petition the Illinois EPA or the US EPA to investigate the rest of that length of pipe.
We're going to have to leave that issue there. We are out of time. Let me thank our two guests, Claudia Lenhoff, who's the Executive Director of the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, and Mr. M.D. Pelmore, who's a resident of the Hill Street neighborhood in Champaign, Illinois, where this industrial pollution has been discovered. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Next week, Don Nolan will be sitting in this chair, and we have a mystery guest who will be here next week. Tune in to find out who that will be. We had someone cancel just at the last minute. Because of their schedule changes. But the 14th, we'll be talking, August 14th, we will be talking with Dr. Samuel Wells from Duke University, who's dean of the chapel there, and Marcia Owen, who are co-authors of Living Without Enemies, Being Present in the Midst of Violence. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.